Hi, I'm Bill Owens. We're here today to raise a number of questions about what has happened in the housing court in the city of Boston. What happened to Alphonse Mourad? When Mourad came to the United States of America when he was about 14 years old and became an entrepreneur, when he became a citizen of the United States of America, when he came to pursue the American dream, what happened? We'll find out as we go along. Today, I'm going to ask Alphonse Mourad a few questions. To our knowledge, Mr. Mourad, you were the first Middle Easterner to own as many as 281 housing units in the city of Boston. And something happened along the way. We'd like for you to share part of that story with us.
Thank you, Senator Owens, for introducing me in your association and being part of this, assisting me toward putting the truth out to the American people and to the Middle Eastern media. I'm probably the only first Arab American in Massachusetts that I know of who ever owned 281 units of Section 8 housing. I bought the units in 1981, and the units consisted of 1,500 residents, black and Hispanics, and I thought at that time I had an opportunity in America to make a difference on Section 8 housing, to be able to achieve also the American dream for the African American residents, and to be able to deed those units into tenant ownership, and to set up programs in the Mandela development, which consists of 22 buildings. So I had a little city in order to set precedence through the whole nation, and hopefully the nation would follow my architectural plan and my programs, which we need in the inner city of America in order to stop the gentrification in America, in order to make the African American black and Latinos part of the American dream. And my dream was to deed those units to the residents after 15 years and for them to own it after I leave Mandela. And this is why I renamed it in 1987, the Mandela Development, which previously known as V&M Management. And the reason for it, I saw the racism in America, and I saw the double standard in South Africa, the apartheid movement. And when Nelson Mandela was imprisoned in 1987 to honor the discrimination that's going on in South Africa, I put that 70-foot sign on the building, and I supported the Mandela Incorporation for Roxbury to become independent city, because I know through my experiences of gentrification, lived in the South End in 58 when I came from Lebanon, we had an Arabic community, and we had a Chinese community, we had Hispanic and blacks, and we were all displaced through urban renewal. The name of the game is gentrification. And minorities don't have a base in any city of America. That is taking a place in Washington, in Chicago, it's taking place in Boston, and Mandela, eventually, it was taken over, unfortunately, by the governmental entities, which it took them 10 years in order to remove Al Mourad of ownership, and they have made promises to the residents that they will be better off with the new owners in order to own it and keep their program.
Mr. Mourad, you helped to create several programs through Mandela. Would you enumerate a few of those programs that you were able to assist others in developing? For instance, Dr. Peggy Brown was one such person where you helped to develop the health spot there, and you helped her, I believe, with the Mandela rowing team. Would you talk about that a little bit?
Yes. I met Dr. Brown, I believe, somewhere around 1991. And she had a dream. She always wanted a space, and she always wanted resources in order to establish health clinic so she could take care of the residents of Roxbury toward diabetes, high blood pressure screening, eye examination, and she also wanted to invest on the Mandela youth in order to set up programs for them. One of them was a rowing team, another was a basketball team, and to be able to take them on trips. So I donated the space free. Also, I allocated funds of $3,000 a month till I was put into bankruptcy, because I believe those youth need an opportunity. And I was thankful for Dr. Brown. She did accomplish that. She was acknowledged in the media. And Governor Cellucci and Mayor Menino, they all acknowledged the Mandela rowing team the first time on the Charles River. And that was a victory for the black youth in the city of Boston.
You were also instrumental in developing a computer learning center that you initiated and pushed forward in Teresa Jones Carter and myself were the writers of a proposal that was funded by HUD to the tune of some $350,000 to get that project off the ground. Would you like to speak about that a little bit and further talk about how, well, I will talk about that a little bit later, about how the bankruptcy court, after are receiving those funds to make sure that the Computer Learning Center could move forward. Because I refused to work with the Stephen Gray's group, how they threw me off the job and took over the project and put someone else in to run the project at a reasonable salary.
Yes, Sir Owens, I recall donating the space at 10 Hammond Street free. I don't recall about basically what other donation I made for the computer center. You were more involved with it at that time than I am. But I believe I backed it up 100% what I was with the space, whatever financial at that time resources I have contributed to it.
What we wanted to do mainly was to give you an introduction and let the public know that Alphonse Murad did not come into the Roxbury community to take away from the resources, but to make money and to reinvest those resources in the people that either lived at the Mandela apartments or the community at large. But let's move on, Mr. Murad, and I want to ask you a couple of questions. How were you forced into bankruptcy, and why do you believe you were forced into bankruptcy? You were forced into bankruptcy shortly after you began to initiate all of these projects. What happened?
Because as a developer, I became a threat to the governmental entities in Boston, because they had a long-term plan, their agenda eventually to gentrify Lower Roxbury, and that will become an annex to Faneuil Hall, downtown Boston. Since I was active in the black community and supported the incorporation, supported empowerment of the black movement and Nelson Mandela freedom, that was a symbolic of a base for African American.
Is that why they wanted to take your property?
Absolutely. In fact, I need to say that when I erected that sign, 70-foot sign on Mandela, I received a call a week later from five developers to invite me. And they said that sign, basically, it will depreciate the assets if I allow it, because I'm a developer like them. Why would you do this to us? Then I realized I became a victim by taking a stand. behind that sign.
Mr. Moran, when you were forced into bankruptcy, it seems to me that I recall someone had a note that might have been a fraudulent note that helped to force you into bankruptcy in the first place. Is that true?
That's correct. Let me just show how the governments work with foreclosures. First, they have tried the Boston Edison and Boston Gas to put me in receivership. And I challenged their policy and I reduced the interest rate statewide from 18% to 14%. Second, the Attorney General Scott Hashbarger with the Boston Redevelopment Authority and the city, they won for receivership from the Judge Catherine White and they lost our receivership. Third, since they had no other avenue, they relied on a junior mortgagor by the name Mario Negocia, and he was the hitman for the governments in order to go ahead and have a fraudulent note that the original note was 18%, his attorney signed, and the foreclosure was based on 18% note, and they altered the note to 24%. Now, they went from the Judge Catherine White, and Judge Catherine White was familiar with the receivership and familiar under foreclosure. There is a statute, Mandela under 121A, which is called excise tax. And the only exception to the rule, it go into condo conversion, is to go into auction. That means that will give the governments a chance for the developers to take it over and put the burden on Al Murad, why he was foreclosed on, he did not pay his bills, and use them as an scapegoat. So just wait, issued an injunction that Mario Negocia's attorney filed another motion from the judge Maria Lopez. In the meantime, the case was transferred to the federal court because HUD was involved and she had no jurisdiction over the case. And then she went ahead without even allowing a payoff, without examining the note, and she said, you go ahead and you foreclose.
Now, what you've just said basically is that Judge Catherine White did not allow the foreclosure, but somehow they went around her, went around her and filed another motion in front of Judge Lopez, and Judge Lopez allowed the foreclosure. And after Judge Lopez allowed the foreclosure, then you were forced to go into the bankruptcy court to stop the foreclosure. Is that true?
Yes, let me go a little bit further. After Judge Lopez allowed the foreclosure, I hired a firm by Ruben Redman, Michael Altman. He said to me, let's take a look at the note and have your accountant do the calculation of the figure and let's send them a check for the payoff of the note and that should satisfy the foreclosure. So the case then was, he filed a motion and was in front of Jess Spellrock. And the payoff figure was $13,500. And the money was sent to the attorney for Mario Negocia, and the check was sent back, and they went back from the Judge Spurlock, and Spurlock allowed the foreclosure without considering the payoff figure of $13,500. In the meantime, Judge Spurlock's wife, when the attorney general went for receivership, she was the head of the criminal investigation, and he recused himself in a prior motions on VNM management. The question is, why this Judge Spurlock at that day, he became the residing judge? I have a problem with that.
So he recused himself in dealing with your company at one point.
Correct.
But then when it came to allowing it into foreclosure,
correct,
Judge Spurlock allowed it to go into foreclosure.
And sanctioned my attorney on top of it.
And sanctioned Michael Altman?
Michael Altman, yes.
Why did he sanction Michael Altman?
Well, if you go into the Boston Mandela Scandal.com and you go under Spurlock picture as the players click on it and you see Michael Altman's affidavit, it's self-explanatory of 10 pages what happened. In the meantime, Judge Maria Lopez, she resigned recently, the last several years, for corruption, and she's no longer the judge.
Would you recite the name of the website where people can get all of this information?
BostonMandelaScandal.com.
Okay, there are several other questions that I'd like to ask. When you were forced then into foreclosure, you went into bankruptcy court. Who was your attorney?
The first attorney was the name Frank Kirby. He's a bankruptcy attorney. I met him and I met with Hennepin King at the same time, and I could not afford to pay Hennepin King the $25,000 retainer, and he agreed to work with me on $15,000 retainer, and he was the first attorney. And the first thing he did, he disclosed to me that he did have a previous problem with Judge Kenner, his last Lebanese client, Middle Eastern. She destroyed him, and he was concerned, the fact I'm Middle Eastern, that we're going to have a problem with her. In fact, it shows it. When he filed his first motion from the Judge Kenner regarding the fraudulent note to explain to her why I was forced into foreclosure, Judge Kenner did not allow the motion to be heard. Never did. She covered up for it. Then Kirby retreated. He said, I could no longer help you. And then I went to Harold Murphy of Hennepin King, and they were retained and approved for $25,000 retainer by the bankruptcy trustee. And then Harold Murphy became my attorney representing Hennepin King.
Harold Murphy, what kind of relationship did you have with Harold Murphy, and did he have any kind of relationship with the trustee?
Yes. In the beginning, I was not aware that Harold Murphy was representing the trustee on two other cases in a bankruptcy, and that's a conflict of interest. In fact, the trustee, he had an obligation, part of the procedure, to file an affidavit, an amended complaint, that he has no relationship with the debtor's attorney. And in that case, my attorney was representing him in front of the same judge, Judge Carol Kenner. I filed bankruptcy on April the 2nd, and Harold Murphy and the trustee were in front of Judge Kenner on April the 11th. That's a clear conflict of interest. That shows Harold Murphy from day one, he was not going to represent the interest of Al Morad as a sole shareholder of the corporation or the creditors. He was going to give Mandela away to Stephen Gray. And that did happen.
How did it appear that they wanted to give it away to Stephen Gray?
Because Stephen Gray, in the first 30 days when he was appointed the trustee, immediately he got an appraisal and he devalued 276 units. It's shocking. For $100,000 to auction it on the block. In the meantime, Harold Murphy was aware that I had appraisals of $12 million by Frank Petrosky, and I had commitments of $5.5 million from Greystone, at that time multi-loan, and I had nothing but money. So clearly, if Harold Murphy was representing my interest, he should have right away told Judge Kenner, Your Honor, if the trustee, the best he could do for the interest of the creditors to auction 276 units that cost HUD $12 million to build, and the city assessed the land alone for $10 million, well, my client got a check for $5.5 million. We should take the property back today.
Did Harold Murphy ever tell Judge Kenner that you had property values by individuals who had done assessments on your property for $12 million?
No, he never disclosed that. And the fact of the matter, Harold Murphy stepped aside, and the trustee hired another attorney by Paul Moore, and Paul Moore becomes the trustee attorney. And the question here, if Mandela, 276 units, only worth $100,000, why would the trustee want two attorneys on board to represent him? And Harold Murphy was paid $150,000 for doing nothing for 8 months, and the attorney Paul Moore became active on the case.
If people want to go to the website to see and get this information, they should be able to go and see.
You could go on the button on the player's pictures. You see the pictures of Harold Murphy and Harry Bean King. You click on that picture and you see the lawsuit that I have filed in the state court for malpractice against him and the trustee Stephen Gray.
Did Judge Kenner know that the property was worth more than $100,000?
Judge Kenner clearly knew, because if you recall, Senator Owens, attorney Leonard Gruwitz, he did file on our behalf an offer to the court called Morad Owens' offer for $5.5 million, and the property should be sold to us and we should take it back. And Judge Kenner sat on that one for 8 months and she did not respond. And then they had a problem with that offer, and you were my partner then, Senator Owen, because now they brought the value up from $100,000, they have to deal with $5.5 million on the table, and an appraisal value from Frank Petrosky, who's part of the court record, they paid him for it, of $12 million. So now the deal is gone. He cannot sneak it through.
If the property is appraised by one group for $12 million and another group for $100,000, does that pose some kind of, what does that tell you?
That tells me Stephen Gray was going to have a party time with his friends, Beacon Residential Property, to take the property eventually for $100,000. And if they have done that, then they would have satisfied the agenda of the governmental entities, because then the property will be auctioned. That was his first option. And that means in 1996, the Section 8 has expired. I had a 15-year contract. The property goes into foreclosure, will be a violation of the 121A agreement, and that's the only exception to the agreement. The property becomes private. Then they go ahead and condo it, and they make a killing. The average condo units in that area today, from $100,000 to $400,000. Mandela today, on a condo conversion, is worth $50 million.
Repeat that figure. Okay. The trustee said, in what year was that, that the property was worth $100,000?
In 1996, January, in the month of January.
In 1996, the trustee at the federal bankruptcy court said the property was worth $100,000. But you're stating today that the property is worth how much?
$50 million under counter conversion. $50 million.
Something doesn't sound right there. Was the federal judge, Carol Kenner, aware of what statements you're making right now?
She was aware all along, because she understood the sole shareholder of V&M Management, who owned the 276 units, had nothing but money. Because I had an obligation, which I personally signed, on all the notes to the Winter Hill Bank and to the utilities, everyone, in excess of $5 million, I'm personally liable. And I was able to bring additional, after the $5 million, a long-term commitment letter for $9 million. So that was on the court record. I had nothing but money. But Kenner has no interest of Al Murad to be brought back into his ownership. Harold Murphy made it clear to me, they want you out, go look for a job, and don't even think going back and taking over Mandela. It's over, Al.
I have a paper here from the Board of Bar Overseers that I'd like to read to you, Ms. Moraz. It said, it does, from the Board of Bar Overseers, the Commonwealth of Massachusetts, Board of the Bar Overseers of the Supreme Judicial Court at 75 Federal Street, Boston, Massachusetts. It says, your allegations that Attorney Murphy did not disclose to you that his firm represented Mr. Gray in other prior or pending matters cannot be substantiated with the degree and certainty of evidence necessary for a successful prosecution. It does appear that Trustee Gray filed two false or at least grossly inaccurate disclosure statements with the bankruptcy court. Did the judge do anything about that after this came from the Board of Bar Overseers?
Absolutely not. I filed a motion, not only me, also eight other creditors filed a motion for Stephen Gray to return his fee and Harold Murphy to return his fee for them not to be paid because there is perjury and a conflict of interest has taken a place in the bankruptcy court. In fact, there was a similar case from the same judge, Carol Kenner, an attorney by the name Neil Stern, that for not disclosing the conflict of interest, she disbarred him out of the bankruptcy court. And she should have done the same thing to Harold Murphy from Hennepin King, and the trustee, Stephen Gray, should have been disbarred as a trustee for life, not to ever be a trustee in the federal bankruptcy court. Covered up for him.
I have here also, just as you mentioned, a motion. It's a joint, it's before the United States Bankruptcy Court, District of Massachusetts. It says, joint emergency motion of creditors and parties at interest for an emergency stay and for relief from and to revoke the September 26, 1997 order confirming the reorganization plan and to retroactively remove Stephen Gray and to vacate the September 19, 1997 order allowing fees to Gray and to Hennepin King and order these fees returned for the serious breach and undisclosed conflict of interest in having attorney Harold Murphy and Hennepin King simultaneously represent Stephen Gray in a Rhode Island bankruptcy while Murphy was still counsel to the debtor, V&M Management, in this proceeding. Does that sound very convoluted to you?
Absolutely.
But before you answer that, I want to let everyone know that this was signed by three attorneys, Victor Aronow, Alphonse Simon, and Noah Simon. It was signed by Arthur Goldsmith,
attorney.
It was signed by Gary Leroy,
attorney,
and seven other creditors, as I count them, 9 creditors. All of these people signed this, and the judge then refused to overturn that.
That's correct.
Is there a reason for that?
Well, it's too late. She have made a decision. She has to deliver Mandela to the governmental entities, and her herself committed perjury on the complaint I filed on her for recusal. The fact is she lied to the judicial committee that she had no knowledge of conflict of Stephen Gray and Harold Murphy. In the meantime, as I said before, I filed bankruptcy on April 2nd, and they were both in front of her on April the 11th. So how poor her memory is. Well, Harold Murphy, he's one of the top bankruptcy attorney in the city of Boston. Also, he was a former clerk of the bankruptcy court. And here she's saying she had no knowledge. So clearly she committed perjury herself.
Why do you believe that Judge Kenner took an early retirement then?
Because I have lasted for years filing over the docket sheet. It clearly shows there was over 200 entries. And this case clearly they start to implement the U.S. trustee, the trustee, the federal judges. And I believe behind the scene, she was told to resign, as well as the trustee, Stephen Gray. They both resigned to protect their pension, number one, but also to protect of any investigators who's going to go into this case. They don't want to be residing judges in America.
So do you believe that they were likely to be investigated?
Absolutely. That's why they resigned.
I have here, which I will read, an order of reassignment. I know for a number of times you had asked for your case to be reassigned, and Judge Kenner refused to do that. You had asked for a change of venue. She refused to give you that. But upon her retirement, she reassigned your case. But what she did is she seemingly picked the person that she wanted to reassign the case to, rather than putting it into a pool and allow the clerk to make that decision. Why do you think that happened? And let me read what it says here. I hereby reassign the contested matter to Judge Noel B. Rosenthal of the Western Division of the Massachusetts Bankruptcy Court. This reassignment does not affect the continued validity of the court's order barring Mr. Morad from coming to the Boston Bankruptcy Court at 10 Causeway Street. A couple of things happened there.
Yes.
One, she barred you from coming to the court to continue to file motions, which is your legal right to do. File as many motions as you wish. Secondly, she did something that appears to be unprecedented by assigning it to a particular judge. Why do you think that happened?
Okay, let me elaborate on that. Number one is, she barred me out of the bankruptcy court without a reason and without a hearing, and that is a violation of my First Amendment right as an Arab American. Clearly, I feel as a second-class citizen in the bankruptcy court in front of Judge Carol Kenner. Second, the reason she has allowed this change of venue, I got tired of her, I want an appeal. Who is responsible to pay the taxes and the negligence on Stephen Gray in the year 2000? In 4 years, she did not allow me a trial. And she was ordered by the three judges, the appellate court, I'm entitled to evidentiary trial. So therefore, I filed the motion and I notified the U.S. Marshal that I'm going to go, it's my First Amendment right, only to the clerk office, and I'm going to file the change of venue. The U.S. Marshal met me at the 11th floor. They said, Mr. Morad, we don't want to arrest you today. You already been arrested once, and you have a record, and you were fined $1,000 by Judge Lindsay. You can see that on the BostonMandelaScandal.com, Judge Morad arrest. And therefore, why don't we take your motion and file it for you? We'll stamp it and give you a copy. By then, Judge Kenner realized, I said to them, I will be back in 3 weeks if she does not rule, and I will be arrested this time, and I will go on hunger strike because I'm entitled to a trial. The appeal court ruled in my favor. It's been 4 years. Then I think she had no choice, and the change of venue was to go to send this trial to New York, Rhode Island, New Hampshire, not Massachusetts, because she is the chief bankruptcy judge. Also, she was the chief bankruptcy of the appellate court. So therefore, even if I appeal her ruling, she controls the appeal court. She's the chief appeal court judge. So that's when she had no choice. She was cornered against the wall, bluntly. And then she assigned it to Judge Rosenthal. But what's ironic here, she denied the change of venue, but then how could she send it to Worcester, to Judge Rosenthal? And technically, by law, you're supposed to send it to a pool. And you don't pick up a favorite judge, a colleague of hers, to finish her mission and finish Al Morad.
Mr. Morad, this is a very, very interesting case, and we will continue to talk about it. We're going to take a break. But before we take a break, I have a question. Should Al Morad go to the Middle East and seek refuge at age 60, or should he stay here and continue to fight, even though he's lost in the bankruptcy court, he's lost with the IRS on a tax case, which we will discuss, and he is now in debt for over $600,000, but never received the benefit of the money that he was taxed on. Should he renounce his citizenship, or is there still an American dream for this Middle Easterner? Alphonse Morad, a man who just a few years ago received over $3 million per year from his investments, today is indigent, homeless, and levied by the IRS for $539,754 in taxes owed for $2,854 in capital gains. Morad never received for the year 1997, and $536,000 Morad never received for the year 1999. Alphonse Morad's petition, motion to reopen and reconsider the panel's October 20th, 2004 decision based upon misrepresentations and fraudulent statements made by the IRS attorney at the September 16th, 2004 argument, the court's own failure to look at the record, and the court's misstatement of the facts and misapplication of the law on who owned property for purposes of obtaining the low income tax credit. First of all, let me state categorically, in order for anyone in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts to get a tax credit, they must have ownership of the property. In order for anyone to be responsible to pay a tax, they must have received the income. In this instance, the Beacon Company got a tax credit that they were not entitled to. Stephen Gray was given ownership of the property by the court so that they could transfer that tax credit possibility to Beacon. Something just doesn't smell right to me. But yet, Alphonse Morad is the one who has to pay the tax on the property, even though the court had awarded the property to Beacon. By the way, there was another proposal to gain possession of the property by Morad Owens for $5.5 million. The court gave it to Beacon for $4 million. Doesn't sound right to me. I'm going to ask Alphonse Murad to talk about the position and the dilemma that he's in as a result of being charged for a tax by the Internal Revenue Service that he was where he never received the funds. Mr. Murad, would you talk about that briefly?
Yes. This is a clear case of real corruption on the federal judges. In order to establish tax credit, you have to have 10 years of ownership without interruption. The only owner who is the sole shareholder of the Mandela Developments is Alphonse Murad. The trustee is only a manager for Alphonse Murad, but he is not the owner. In this case, the trustee, to qualify for tax credit, Judge Kenner, in the confirmation plan, September 26, 1997, appointed Stephen Gray the owner. Therefore, Stephen Gray stepped in my shoes. So the argument here, if Stephen Gray applied for the tax credit as the owner of the Mandela Developments in 97, and he was allocated $12 million of tax credit, and he sold the property in December 31st, 97, and there was a profit of $2,088,000, what I get to do with it? He's the owner. The IRS should go after Stephen Gray. Now, the IRS finding that they don't acknowledge Stephen Gray as the owner, and they acknowledge as Alphonse Murad, he's the S Corporation, and he is the owner. And my argument, if I am the owner, then where is my tax credit? I'm entitled to $12 million. I'm entitled to the proceed of $2,088,000 from the sale. I got plenty of money to pay the IRS. I want you to be my partners. I'm a money man. I want to pay you. Where is my money? Would you believe it? The three judges in the prior case when I sued Hennepin King and Stephen Gray, they dismissed the case on Murad has no standing and Judge Kenner's order, there is no distribution from the sale coming to Alphonse Murad. So if I have no standing to file any motion and I have no equity, what am I today assessed for $536,000 that was about 7 months ago and now is excess of $600,000? And the same judges on the panel, Judge Torello and Judge Lynch, they dismissed the complaint against Judge Kenner way back. They're the one who dismissed the lawsuit. Clearly, they were familiar with the background of Alphonse Murad. They were biased. They had to bail out Beacon Residential Property, Stephen Gray, and basically that was clearly a Jewish takeover against an Arab American. This is what I was robbed with. That is the reality. And this is who's gonna rob Roxbury and who's gonna justify it. This is a new adventure. The response to this motion was one word, denied, without explanation, without even allowing me the right to appeal them because they did not render a decision. That is shocking. So today, I owe the IRS in excess of $600,000 for money I never received. Now, I have tried to seek help, and I sent a letter to the President, to the U.S. Justice, and asked for Washington to intervene since I have exhausted all my remedy in the state of Massachusetts. And clearly, the response was negative. There was no response, except they acknowledged in my letter. My problem right now as a Middle Eastern and being put on receivership in America and being barred out of the bankruptcy court for life, bluntly with Jewish judges, some of them, and Beacon Residential Property is Howard Cohen and Norman Leventhal, who contributed $3 million to the Clinton campaign and millions to the Bush campaign. Does an Arab American immigrants have a chance against those entities? I don't think so. As a response to the Secretary of the State, Condoleezza Rice, She speaks about freedom for Lebanon, democracy, and First Amendment right. I'd like her to examine the Boston Mandela scandal and go to the bottom of the IRS scandal and go into Al Murad barred from the 11th Florida bankruptcy court by federal judges. Where is my rights in America? Why was I robbed? Are we saying basically that in the future, this whole thing, if America takes control of any portion of the Middle East, would they be put on receivership to bleed the assets like Mandela, take the oil away and leave the people indigent for the next 100 years? I have a problem with that. I have a problem with the motive. There's dishonesty here, and the media is not reporting the truth to the American people. The American people are in the dark. They're beautiful people. I lived with them. They will act if they know the truth. The problem is the truth is not put on the table, and that's why they're confused who to believe. And that's my final statement. I'm disappointed in the U.S. justice, and I'm disappointed there was no federal investigation by the FBI and by the U.S. attorney to look at the fraud, the perjury, and the scandalous of $12 billion that robbed me and robbed the Mandela residents. And that's a really national story, international story, and now I'm taking this story back home where I born to the Middle East, because I have a problem with it. As an American, I question how long would I be an American. I'm on the process. Since the justice is not here, the only comeback I could make is to denounce my citizenship as a protest to the government, not to the American people, and to be able to take this story to the Al Jazeera newspaper, media, TV station in the Middle East, to all the Arab nation, and I want them to take a look. Does Al Murad, his contribution on policies and his goodwill to minorities in America at the age of 60, deserve to be homeless, deserve to be evicted, deserve to be foreclosed on? I think that they'll have that answer by reviewing the BostonMandelaScandal.com and go under the players. President Bush picture there, President Clinton, Senator Curry, and the IRS commissioner, and click to all these pictures. They got the resources, let them do their homework, and I would apologize if anyone disagreed with me. I will owe a public apology. I don't think anyone will return a phone call. Thank you.
Mr. Murad, I do have a couple of questions that I want to ask you regarding that. When Judge Kenner appointed Stephen Gray as owner instead of trustee, he was able to qualify for tax credit exceeding $11 million and rental income of over $2 million. There is a need to investigate not only his eligibility to receive this money, but also how this money was spent. Did Stephen Gray have the legal right to these tax credits?
Absolutely not. That tax credit today is fraudulent. If the IRS, criminal investigation, conducted an investigation, they will take that credit away from Beacon Residential Property today, and they will have no choice if they were going to keep it. I was told by a legal counsel they have to bring Al Murad as a partner because he's the original owner. Otherwise, all the money will be pulled out. It's illegal.
Where did the money go that they took in this particular situation?
Supposedly, the $12 million tax credit, $50,000 rehab supposed to go per unit to 276 units. And I've been talking to the residents, lucky if they spent on some of these units $5,000 per unit, because they have no intention spending $50,000 a unit because the tenants are not going to move out for that luxury. And they had no intention deeded the units to the tenant for $1. So therefore, they spent major money on landscaping, trying to dress the Bindra's building in the front for gentrification, put the lights, do the shrubs, to attract outside investors. And basically, the only reason some of the residents are still living there because Al Murad cases were still open to the year 2004, and they were scared Beacon Residential Property to make a move, till all the cases are dismissed, and that's what borrowed time for the residents. But now they will move forward, and the residents start to be evicted.
Well, could you tell me whether or not Stephen Gray and Beacon Management violated their eligibility for these tax credits when the company was sold? The company, by the way, was sold, and would you explain that and whether or not they were continuously eligible for these tax credits?
Well, number one is a violation of the partnership between Beacon and the Mandela residents. Originally, they started a nonprofit, and Beacon converted the nonprofit to a profit. That's illegal. Second, under tax credit, you're supposed to get a 15-year maximum of Section 8 housing contract in order to secure affordability. Third, you're supposed to have a management plan for the residents to take over their ownership. So Beacon came in as the good guys that they were going to set precedents and educate the tenants and deed the property to them. So in fact, now the property is private and the $12 million is illegal. I think the tenants have a great class action lawsuit today if they were together and they go after Beacon. I believe they could get the property back deeded to them. And there will be indictment coming down on judges, on fraudulent tax credit, on Beacon residential property. Howard Cohen, and his disclosure, he said they own 5,000 units of affordable housing across the nation. I question how many of those units they were getting allocation of tax credit that never went to the developers. We got a racket going on here. I mean, this has been going on for decades. So the tenants are used as a straw to bring the money in, then displace, then use the money into condo conversion, and everybody makes a killing. It's sad for the community. It's sad for the Black African American tenants and the Hispanics, and that's the way the game's played with the IRS and the tax credit.
When Beacon Company went to the court, the bankruptcy court, under its reorganization and told the court that they were going in as partners with the tenants, did Gray and Beacon offer the residents ownership as required under the joint organization plan, and have they lived up to it?
Well, absolutely they offered them ownership, because why would the residents overnight, they don't know Beacon from nowhere, align themselves with them and celebrate their ownership if they did not enter an actual agreement? They were actually, they had a partnership. It's recorded with the state. They formed a partnership. And at that time, the Mandela residents were the general partners to make it look good for the media, and Beacon were the limited partners. And then, after the approval, they amended the confirmation plan, and now Beacon owned the property outright without the residents.
Finally, does the partnership still exist?
Absolutely not. The partnership died back in 1997 after the confirmation plan. Ooh. It's gone, right in 97. It never existed. That was only a straw. That was only temporary to get by the confirmation plan of the bankruptcy. Once they get what they wanted, then they went back and got one of the Mandela residents to become the president, have him sign on an amended plan, and basically some of the residents, activists, they sold their own tenants.
Was that legal?
Absolutely not. If an attorney represents the tenants today, this would be the scandalous of the country, ever.
We'd like to continue this in a moment, but right now, we're going to talk about a convoluted scheme where Beacon, certain residents, and certain attorneys got involved to take the property away from the tenants who were promised ownership for $1. I have a disclosure statement with respect to the joint plan of reorganization of Mandela Residents Cooperative Association, Inc. and Beacon Residential Properties Limited Partnership. This is the statement that was presented to the court. And it states, the goals of the partnership are to acquire, rehabilitate, and operate Mandela as a physically sound and fiscally stable residential community, to create a management structure for Mandela and assures the management is undertaken with the best interests of the residents in mind, to create a financial resource and an ownership structure which will provide opportunity for the MRCA, the residents, to acquire control of Mandela in the manner set forth in this agreement, and to enable Beacon to achieve responsible profit through the provision of development and management. This was an opportunity put before the court for the tenants at Mandela to be able to purchase that property known as Mandela Properties with the Mandela Residents Association. The option is to acquire the Beacon Partnership interest after 5 years of successful operation of the redevelopment. Mandela MRCA shall have the option to acquire all of the interest of Beacon in the partnership for $1, provided, however, that this option shall not be exercised until Beacon and or its affiliates have been released from all guarantees, fee holdbacks, and escrow arrangements or in similar financial commitments approved by the partnership. What has happened here is that Beacon, without the authority of the tenants, but by use of one of its members, has sold the property. The tenants never received the benefit they were entitled to. As a matter of fact, those tenants who were active and who knew exactly what was going on were evicted by Beacon. One such person, Grace Romero, I understand, was evicted, and Beacon spent more than $100,000 just to get her evicted because they didn't want her to interfere with their plan. I'm going to ask Al Morad to just tell us a little bit about that, because he's been in constant touch with Ms. Romero. And there's another tenant by the name of Thelma Barrows. Many efforts have been made also to evict her. It's not clear to me whether they have been able to consummate that eviction with Thelma Barrows, but Mr. Morad would have the answer. Tell us exactly what happened in the case of Thelma Barrows and Grace Romero.
Senator Owens, Grace Romero was the first tenant when HUD built the Mandela development back in 1968. She's been a resident for 30 years. She has been active board member for over 20 years. Since I took control of Mandela, since 1981, she has been active in the youth program, she's been active with the tenants, she's been active toward tenant ownership, and she has played a part toward empowerment. Thelma Burris also, she has been active, and she has filed motion on the federal court for investigation of the fraudulent tax credit and their ownership. And you could click under the players, you'll see Thelma Barrows' picture, and you click on that, you'll see all the motion, and Grace Romero's eviction speaks for herself. When Grace Romero was being evicted, I went to the housing court to be a witness. the fact the attorney for Beacon Residential Property clearly misled the court, and he said he represents the Mandela residents. And Beacon is unique enough to make the residents evicting each other, where in a sense the attorney was really representing Beacon. That's clearly fraudulent. Judge Dare knew better not to let me on the stand and explain to him the background on the fraudulent eviction that has taken place on Grace Romero. That's very tragic, very devious. And after 30 years, a woman at her age right now in retirement, she doesn't deserve to be out evicted.
When a resident sells out the other residents, is there any punishment for that? How can such a person be punished, or is there any legal way to punish that person other than having the tenants vote him out, him or her out, after that happens?
Well, what's unique about it, Beacon particularly made sure there is no evidence of that, because the original president of the Mandela Residence Partnership was Glenn Hall, and he played an active role with Mayor Menino and Beacon Residential Property and the governors, and he was at the celebration of the Mandela residence at the Roxbury Community College. And for a president who's supposed to be working with Beacon toward the goal of ownership, he moved 6 months after, and he works for the MBTA. I was told he got a promotion. All the other residents moved out. Beacon were paying $5,000, whoever wants to move voluntarily. And basically, they dismantled all the original players that they understood the partnership, they understood the tax credit, they understood their legal rights to an ownership. So Beacon clearly knew what they were doing.
There's a lot more to be mentioned here. However, we can't do everything in one taping or one sitting. We cannot get all of the information out. We will do other tapes. I'd like to ask Mr. Morad if he would give us a wrap-up statement, give us some advice. He's been through this. He's lost a ton of money. And how would you advise young entrepreneurs to do if they were in a similar situation? Well, and before you answer the question, what do you see as the potential for Roxbury as far as the gentrification issue is concerned and Beacon's role in all of that?
Well, for Lower Roxbury, that gentrification already started, I would say, since Mandela fell into the trustee hand. Because Mandela is 6 acres of land, prime land in the Lower Roxbury. The city agenda is to maximize land value to create more revenue for the city. For example, Mandela sits on 6 acres of land. The Prudential sits on 6 acres of land. The Prudential pays over $15 million of real estate taxes. Also, they pay $70 million of sales tax, and they employ hundreds of people. So if you take a look right now into Lower Roxbury, you see the Reggie Lewis Center. It's only a slogan name, named after Reggie Lewis. But the bottom line, who's going there, is your elitist white folks in the future. You take a look at the Boston Police Station, $71 million. The crime is on the increase. And the reason for it, they're not given enough protection for Roxbury because they want the residents to move out. Because when you can't control the neighborhood and the crime takes over, that's intentional, deliberate. And that choice of the family is to move out of Roxbury. That's one way to gentrify it. So I predict for the next 10 years, Beacon Residential Property will play the gentrified part. They will own the majority of Lower Roxbury and Roxbury. And I think the last black culture is on their way out. I think this should have started 10 years ago. What we're talking about right now, we're 10 years behind time. I don't think there's enough time to regroup and put the community together and put a stop to the gentrification and control whatever's left today in Lower Roxbury and Roxbury and stop expanding the gentrification. That's up to the black leadership, that's up to the clergymen, that's up to the churches, that's up to the ministers, that's their culture. I can't speak for them, but I could advise them. I lived through the gentrification to the south end, and we had Arabic community, we had three churches, and we were all displaced by the BRA, and none of us exist today, and that's what's going to happen to Roxbury, and that's what's happened national. That issue is a national issue as well as Boston.
Mr. Morant, we are truly grateful to you for making us aware of what is going on in Roxbury, starting with Mandela, and how the people there have been duped. I agree with you that any time there is a desire for gentrification, the city will withdraw the services. The people will find themselves in a dilemma, particularly in the area of crime, and they'll find that they'll want to leave that area. We don't want the people of Roxbury to leave. We want them to stay there, and we're going to hope that we can turn around the issue of gentrification. But in the meantime, we've been fortunate. We want to give special thanks to Dre Hollywood Entertainment. We hope that the public at large will benefit from this document. But equally important, we hope that governmental officials will see it and begin to do something about it. There's a lot of corruption that goes on, even beyond my imagination, in the federal court. I sat there and I saw it, and I know that there was a corruption that was going on. The judge knew it, and any time a federal judge will allow a trustee to say that a property is worth $100,000 that has over 276 units, where an appraiser will come in and show a $12 million appraisal. One group will offer $5.5 million to purchase. Another group will offer $4 million to purchase. But the trustee has said it was worth $100,000. Something smells, and as my mother would say, there's a dead cat on the line. Thank you.